The choice of song seemed natural because of all the Jobim songs. This one seems the most surreal, the most, in some ways, contemporary and experimental. The melody is kind of like a loop, a mantra, and the text, the lyrics are kind of surreal but very beautiful. It's a very contemporary lyric.
David Byrne became one of Red Hot's main supporters. For Red Hot in Rio, he recorded the iconic Jobim song Waters of March, along with Brazilian star Marisa Monte. Their challenge was to recreate one of Brazil's most beloved songs, better known for its 1994 classic recording by Elis Regina and Tom Jobim. Marisa and David's version of the song transcends, delivering a powerful translation of the intensity and the chaos of that moment in time in the mid-1990s.
The waters of March, it's the promised life, it's the joy in your heart.
Red Hot in Rio 25 Music Activism is a docu-podcast produced by the pro-social creative production company Red Hot Organization that dives into the creative universe of the Red Hot in Rio album, released in 1996. A project that gathered funds and raised awareness for the fight against the HIV/AIDS epidemic, involving major music stars recreating bossa nova themes with modern electronic elements, inspired by the trip-hop and chill-out scenes that became popular around the world at the time of the album's release. Throughout three episodes, we will retrace Red Hot's history in the early 90s political-cultural context and its parallels with the present time, and the social and musical impact caused by the production. Artists identified with Red Hot's artistic approach as with its mission. Many were experiencing firsthand the wrath of the epidemic among their family and loved ones. It took more than having artists on board to make the project take off. Red Hot in Rio featured 21 songs and interludes, involving clearing songs and publishing rights, and securing special label permissions for the artist's participation on the project. One cannot imagine the amount of legal work involved in 1994 to make sure everything was in place for the release. That's right, the project took 2 years under production, from inception to being finally released in 1996. It was a complicated bureaucratic road, but Beco and Red Hot managed to secure all the rights needed. Besides all the participating artists, one of the key allies of the project was Chuck Mitchell.
I remember when the list of contributors was first sent over to me, and I sort of laughed out loud because it was like, how are they going to get all these people onto this album?
Chuck Mitchell, head of the Verve label at the time, was astounded by the proposed list of artists to be invited to collaborate on Red Hot in Rio. It was a top-notch wish list. Verve Records gave the project a home and its kickstart. Verve's catalog of classic jazz and bossa nova includes a treasure trove of Brazilian classic recordings.
I was delighted when John Carlin and Beco Drainoff and Paul Heck approached us with the Red Hot in Rio idea. I think the reason John, Beco, and Paul reached out to us was that the Verve catalog was, and still is, very rich in bossa nova recordings by Jobim, João and Astrud Gilberto, Walter Wanderley, etc., and many great classics of the genre, also on the Brazilian Philips and Elenco labels, which we had access to through PolyGram.
The project garnered key allies in the music industry.
During the early 90s, when we were doing the Giant Step Club, I think a lot of it had to do at first with samples that were being used on some of the records, and then DJs being brave enough to really play that type of music. In London, you had the classic jazz rooms. DJs like Giles Peterson and Patrick Forge were playing a lot of Brazilian and Latin music, and really helping to resurrect careers of people like Ayeta Moreira, Flora Parim, Hamada Pascal, Jorge Benjor, Joyce, the list really goes on. And of course, at Giant Step, you know, we loved that music too. So it was just, I think, a natural progression as people were discovering more and more music, that they then go into the roots. And obviously Brazilian music played a large part in that.
New York's Giant Step co-founder and CEO, Maurice Bernstein, was a big supporter early on. Maurice was very aware of the appeal of Brazilian music in the young generation of the 1990s. But what's really the magic in Brazilian music and bossa nova? Red Hot's co-founder, John Carlin, has a great definition that was used as the project's tagline.
The thing about Brazilian music and Jobim is it just, everybody loves it. And I remember on Red Hot in Rio, we put a tagline, and it was pure listening pleasure. I don't know what that would be in Portuguese, because that to me is what Brazilian music meant, pure listening pleasure. I think the, you know, the African rhythmic tradition, which was allowed to thrive in Brazil, where it was suppressed in the United States, really did lead to a lot of what you hear on Red Hot in Rio, and why Red Hot in Rio is so important, because it is like this thriving of the, you know, African rhythm and European songwriting sensibilities, which is, if you look in the 20th century, I really feel almost all the great music happens in a place, usually a port city, where European and African culture collides. So it's in Brazil, it's in Jamaica, it's in New Orleans. You know, there's something really profound about that combination, where you have this sort of African rhythm, European sense of harmony and melody, and they sort of invent something, you know, incredibly new and of the 20th century.
Beku and Chuck Mitchell also share their thoughts on bossa nova.
Classic bossa nova is really a distillation of fundamental Afro-Brazilian samba rhythms and American cool jazz and French impressionist harmonies thrown in. And these elements were merged and distilled down to a pure essence, which means that if one stays true to that, one can build other forms on top of that foundation.
And they call it the apartment samba. And there are several cases. One is that João Gilberto used to rehearse in the bathroom of his family's home so he could hear himself, the acoustics in the bathroom, and he would be in there for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours repeating that mantra. His music is very mantra-like as well. He was playing with the guitar and his voice over the beat. And you can hear sort of a samba beat all the time. Bossa Nova is based on samba. It's samba minus everything. It's like a naked samba. And I think that was the genius of João Gilberto. It's like he invented something new. It's like something that didn't exist before him. And then that added with Jobim's melodies and Vinicius de Moraes' lyrics. So it was a poet, a composer, and a guy who invented a new way to play and sing. It was, again, the perfect storm of new music, very sophisticated music, and singing low and chilling out and not belting anymore and no histrionics and no effects. He was very particular. His records had to be very, very simple. There was no delays, no trickery. And that's, I think, the world felt, and the jazz musicians that were coming to Brazil in the early 60s felt, my God, what is this? And I produced this documentary, Johnny Panima, and several of our interviewees mentioned, we had Bud Shank before he passed away as American saxophonist. He says, jazz music was never the same after bossa nova.
I think there's a magic to Brazilian music. There is a mystique, a melody, a sweetness, an emotion that really just has never really been duplicated in a way that Brazilian music really portrays that. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that Brazil is just such a melting pot. So you have the sounds of Africa, you have the sounds of Spain, Portugal, United States, Europe, Italy. It's all in there. And, you know, it's one of the few languages that I don't understand Portuguese, but I really don't care that I don't understand anything that anybody's saying, because just the way the music is executed is so beautiful and so emotional that I just find myself just trying to sing what I think of the words. And whenever I'm actually with Portuguese people, they laugh at me because I'm singing it all wrong. But you know, I think one of the beauties of Brazilian music is it actually makes you feel like it's yours.
The fascination with bossa nova reached not only the instrumental and jazz artists, but also major pop stars such as George Michael.
I've been listening to Brazilian jazz music, in particular the songs of Antonio Carlos Jobim, for about 10 years, probably almost 10 years now, and I think I probably didn't have the confidence to include them in earlier work because I didn't think I understood them well enough yet. But the more you listen to things, the more you can allow them to drift into what you do.
Jinga.
Jinga.
Jinga is like malemolência, it's like swing, it's like, you know, jinga. Jinga is what, you know, Brazilians have while playing music, while playing soccer.
Ben Watt and Tracy Thorne from Everything But the Girl also drink from the bossa nova potion much before the Red Hot in Rio project came along.
I think it's to do with simplicity and a kind of purity of approach.
And purity of melody too. I mean, it just took people back to the sort of classic songwriters, Gershwin, Cole Porter, you know, just pure melody and pure chord change. And that was kind of, I think, what the appeal of it was, you know.
Um cantinho, um violão, esse amor, uma canção, pra fazer feliz já que se ama.
I grew up in a house where there was a lot of jazz played. My dad was a jazz musician. And I mean, one of the things that he loved was that whole move of bossa nova into American jazz in the late 50s and 60s. I grew up listening to all that, and it was very familiar to me.
Their recording of the classic Corcovado conquered new fans around the world. It is one of the most modern versions of the classic to this day.
The project really came together for me when I heard Everything But the Girl's broken beat take on Corcovado. Tracy Thorne's voice is a great carrier of unadorned melody, no matter what she's singing. And the rhythm track was a quiet shock in that it fit the song so well coming out of left field.
It's a song that we've known for a long time anyway, and about 4 years ago we were due to go and do a gig out in Portugal, so we decided that I'd learn the words in Portuguese Brazilian so that we could do it at this gig, like come on for a big encore. And I spent ages learning the lyrics and someone taught them to me and how to pronounce it, and then at the last minute the gig got cancelled, which was a real drag, and I thought, you know, well, I've done this now, I'm going to use it one day. So when the Red Hot in Rio people approached us about a year ago, we thought, this is it, this is the perfect opportunity.
Everything But the Girl's version of Corcovado, what I thought was superb, and I think that epitomised the spirit of the album.
As Maurice just mentioned, the Red Hot in Rio project brought to a global audience the vast Brazilian music repertoire
through an amazing array of artists.
When the Red Hot Rio album came out, I think it really introduced a lot of people to many of these classic Brazilian songs. And the way it also paired up a lot of classic Brazilian artists with some of the more contemporary artists like, you know, Stereolab and Herbie Mann and Vel Gilberto and Cazaza, Incognito and Ana Karem with Omar. So it was a great way of introducing the classic music with the classic artists with these contemporary artists.
Red Hot in Rio had several unique collaborations, which also put the record in a very special place. You know, we were very adventurous. I think all Red Hot records, but Red Hot in Rio, you know, has some standouts from George Michael with Astro Gilberto, from Caetano with Cesare Évora and Ryuichi Sakamoto. Those were things, or a cool band like Stereolab back in the mid-90s with Herbie Mann, who was a much older jazz, you know, guy, who was very influential in bringing bossa nova in the 60s to the US and the world.
The other really great collaboration that brought this kind of European electronic and kind of roots quality was Stereolab and Herbie Mann. And Stereolab was this, you know, really interesting kind of French-British band, and they pioneered using analog synthesizers. So it was digital, but it was kind of retro digital. And it was a really just amazing experience of working with them, but also saying Herbie Mann, you know, at that time was almost ignored. And as music lovers, we were like, this man is a central figure, not just in jazz music, but in really, like, I hate this term, but what became known as world music. It's a very bad term, comes out of the United States where we're, you know, we think it's all about us and everybody else are others. So basically he started really thinking about African music and Brazilian music. So he recorded an album in Brazil, you know, at the same time that Stan Getz recorded the famous Getz Gilberto album in the United States. So we really wanted to give respect to Herbie Mann. It was like, oh my God, he's still alive. He's still playing the flute. So we really kind of created these collaborations, these collisions between these two different cultures, but because the, you know, musicians are relaxed and intense as well, so they're very laid back. Oh, cool, we get to like make something with Herbie Mann. But at the same time, I think, you know, like David Byrne and Marisa Monte, they sort of push each other somewhere new.
The curatorial point of view is a key ingredient on all Red Hot projects, especially when we discuss the collaboration among artists from three completely different contexts on the same track.
So Becco has this idea, you know, we're like, okay, you know, it's not just going to be Jobim. So it was Becco's idea of the song and kind of approaching these artists. You know, everybody loved Cesare Évora. Ryuichi Sakamoto, he's even more revered today, quite rightly, than he was back then. You know, Yellow Magic Orchestra, he's sort of invented whole genres all by himself. So it was really Becco's idea of the song. Let's kind of mix these three people together. I guess Caetano and Ryuichi knew each other, but had never done anything before. But then we were like, the song was having a lot of trouble finishing. You know, it was beautiful. I think Sakamoto produced it. So at the end, when we were hearing the drafts or like the songs, we actually went back to Sakamoto, which is a little bit cheeky, and said, it doesn't really finish. You know, it doesn't feel right. Do you think you could repeat Cesare's Évora at the end to make it feel balanced? Which he ultimately did.
The whole experience was so unique and so amazing. And imagine, this is, today we live in a different world, you know, the barriers are so off now. People are used to comments and opinions and asks and favors and now everything is sort of open in the air. Back then, it was not so direct and so easy like that. And to go to that stature of people.
I just remember going to his studio, which was like a Zen palace in Lower Manhattan. It was just this incredible experience. And he's like, it's kind of like meeting a monk.
Dawn will break across the sky. Soon you will abandon me. Forgiveness was much more than you could ask of me.
Another favorite for me is the collaboration between Ryuichi Sakamoto, Cesaria Evora, and Gaetano Veloso. It's beautiful and deep and shows that the musical greatness knows no borders. And of course, the George Michael Astru Gilberto duet on Desafinado is for all time. George was a huge star at that moment, and his participation was both profound, creatively, and generous of his time and artistry.
In 1996, George Michael was one of the biggest pop stars on the planet. Astru Gilberto was the subtle voice that made The Girl from Ipanema famous all over the world and had been out of the public eye for many years. Going from one Gilberto to another, we get to the lovely Bebel Gilberto. Like Bossa Nova itself, the main storyline of this project, Bebel, is the daughter of the legendary Bossa Nova creator João Gilberto and singer Miúcha. But for this project, Bebel did not sing one of the standards made famous by her father. The singer gave us an original theme.
When I first heard about the Red Hot and Rio organization was through the beautiful project, Red Hot and Blue. I never gonna forget the iconic video with Nina Cherry saying, "I got you under my skin." So that version was like a hit on my era when I was on my teens, and I had really adore all the embrace and the taste, and very good taste. I think that, you know, John, Paul, everyone I met through Beko Drenov, I had also the privilege to learn how cool they are. And everything they touched had something special. It was very, very well treated with class and quality. So I love the Red Hot organization, and I'm thrilled to be part of the album, the first album, and very happy that, you know, to know them and to know that they've been around for so long.
Bebel shared the background of the track Eu Preciso Dizer Que Te Amo, as composed by her, Dé, and Cazuza, and what her involvement with the project represents in her career.
Recording Preciso Dizer Que Te Amo was a special moment. It was in 86 when I was recording my first album. By then, I was married to Dé, who was a bass player that worked with Cazuza, and they had a band together called Barão Vermelho. After that song, I mean, when we recorded that song, we recorded it in a cassette player.
Agora eu queria apresentar uma música de autoria de Dé, Bebel e Cazuza, chamada Eu Preciso Dizer Que Eu Te Amo. Bebel vai começar a cantar agora. Por favor, não faça barulho no ambiente. Muito obrigado.
Maestro.
Maestro, Beto.
Vai,
sapo. Pato.
I had that first recording and the cassette always with me. Later on, I moved to New York, and in 91, I met Beko Drenov, who I became very close friends with and, you know, produced many beautiful things that basically was the essence of my life. So Beko had this beautiful project with the Red Hot in Rio organization. that it was already happening and had that album that I love so much, the Red Hot and Blue. So they were working on the Red Hot and Rio and asked me to donate the song that actually was in a cassette player, and the quality was quite bad, although all the love was, you know, in there. So they cleaned the tape, they took care of all the recording and made it totally professional. And Cazuza's mother, because unfortunately Cazuza died in 91 of AIDS, she was thrilled to be part of it, as they have an organization called Viva Cazuza in Brazil. So anyway, for me, that was like a first blast, because to be on that project and to have a song that was recorded on that way, it was really special treat, an unique opportunity. And after that recording, many doors opened for my career. And for me, that suffered so much in the 8 times, losing so many friends, including Cazuza, I learned that a little bit more, that I could work and help others with this beautiful organization that is the Red Hot and Rio organization.
Cazuza, the artist mentioned by Bebel, died of AIDS complication in 1990. He was 32 years old. After leaving us at such a young age, Cazuza became one of the biggest poets of his generation. His songs are filled with lyricism and rock and roll attitude. Cazuza became the symbol in the Brazilian fight against AIDS. Another heroic voice in the Rio project is Chico Science from Nação Zumbi. Hailing from Brazil's northeastern town of Recife, Chico Science and his friends fused hip-hop beats and distorted guitars with the traditional and powerful maracatu drums. Their beat did not only create a new musical language, but an entire musical genre, Mangue Beach.
The song is about psychedelic Brazilian drum and bass, and we play with Chico's material, with the guitars going really frantic, noisy, to reach the point that Chico breaks down and kicks his maracatu and all his poetry.
Pioneering jungle DJ Soul Slinger produced the groundbreaking remix of the Tropicália classic Maracatu Atômico, composed by George Mottner and Nelson Jacobina, recreating it in a kinetic drum and bass style.
But the other thing that Beco's referring to, which is a really funny phenomenon, which is asking artists to do something and then being open to the fact that they may come up with a better idea than you had to begin with.
Red Hot and Rio is best described by John Carlin, a co-production by the brilliant minds of artists and the collaboration of industry professionals that believed in the project. After 24 months of production, Red Hot and Rio was released in October 1996, reverberating both inside the music industry as with the audience at large and the press. The album reached its main goal: to raise awareness and bring preventive information about the HIV virus to young people. We will further discuss Red Hot and Rio's relevance and impact on today's ongoing challenges on the next episode of Red Hot and Rio Music Activism. This is an original podcast series produced by the Red Hot Organization and Club. Produced and directed by Beppo Granoffi and John Carlin. Created and written by Pedro Pontorini. Sound design, editing, and mix by Conrado Lima. Narrated by Cayena. Executive producer, Pedro Almeida. Artwork by Alexandre Ferrari. Production assistant, Tammy Gelbert. Special thanks to all artists and interviewees, the extended Red Hot team, Verve Records, Universal Music, and everyone who has contributed, giving us testimonials for this podcast. For more information and to keep posted on Red Hot projects, please check www.redhot.org and join Red Hot on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.